This episode of LedgerCast is brought to you by Brave New Coin. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check it out. That's a landing page for BNC Pro. It's an all-in-one cryptocurrency management platform. You can join the wait list. It's launching really soon. There's a lot of stuff going on with BNC Pro right now. BNC Pro allows you to track your cryptocurrency portfolio and see an accurate market value, all your P&L stuff at a glance. Get your trades automatically updated and imported into BNC Pro from exchanges that you use. You can tag different things so that you can filter and just check out everything that you've got going on in your portfolio, all at a really nice glance. And there's tons of flexibility built into what you can do. There's also a real-time news feed built into BNC Pro. It's pretty cool. I think you need to try it. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check that out. And thank you to the team at Brave New Coin for being a LedgerStatus partner. Now here's the show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here today with Josh Olswich. Hey, Josh.
Hi, Brian. How's it going?
Hey, it is going pretty well. We've got some news notes, price analysis. I'm going to tell my lightning story thus far, which I've got room to go, but I've been kicking around the Lightning Network, and it hadn't been great. Let's put it that way. From a user experience perspective, I am a total noob, but we'll get into that. But first, why don't we talk about a couple of things that are in the news today? The top one in my mind, which is a lot of fun, is that Circle is spinning out Poloniex, and it's going to some kind of Asian equity firm. It sounds like Circle is no longer going to have an ownership stake of any kind.
I love how they spun that. Used the word spinning.
But they did. Spinning it out. We did not sell this for a gigantic markdown. We're spinning it out.
We'll say we'll use the word framing. They framed that very suspiciously. And it's just super funny
in a way to. Almost like they were kind of saying, please don't remember that we bought this for $400 million.
Exactly. Oh, man.
So I was speculating in a chat earlier about like the $400 million. Surely that wasn't cash because Circle's a startup. So like they probably offered cash and stock. And in my mind, I did some research on like Circle's own funding, and they have raised almost $250 million. But they've got 350 employees, which is very expensive, maybe up to like $50 million a year. So they can't have $400 million in cash to have paid for Polo, but maybe they paid like $40 million. And maybe they gave away equity in Circle, say, I don't know, 5, 10, 15% worth of Circle to the Polo founders. So the Polo folks, you know, they sold it for $400 million, but a lot of that was probably in Circle stock, which is now worth less, almost assuredly. So either way, they probably sold it for a lot less money to these folks that picked it up, who are promising to invest $100 million into Polo. How do you feel about that?
Well, considering what Polo is and like how little they've actually done, they have upgraded the UI a little bit here and there, but like the order book and everything, it's so archaic compared to like if you look at crypto exchanges versus traditional stuff, like crypto stuff's in the dark ages anyway, but like we've clearly moved on from like the BitMEX style UI to like, you know, improved UIs. You know, Binance has really good UI. I'm not a huge fan of Binance, but they have a good UI. And to see like Polo have 350 people and still do nothing for like a year, 2 years, whatever it was, it's just kind of hard to believe. Like where most of those people support people, like I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they had some developer maintenance happening, but I mean, they could have outsourced revamping the exchange itself. I don't know. I feel like they did everything wrong. That said, you know, I think there was opportunities for attracting people on U.S. exchanges, and of course, that's when they're selling it out. Like, because at the same time, with you know, Coinbase raising their fees 0.5% either way, and you know, Binance splitting their exchange into two, I actually tend to think probably Binance still has the upper leg with Binance U.S. because they have the lower fees. They're opening up their markets. They're basically opening any market that Coinbase has. Let Coinbase do their due diligence for them. But still, I think there's some opportunity in these American markets, and now they're selling it off and saying, ah, screw America. So now how do they differentiate themselves from all the other non-US markets? Like, what makes them any different or better than the other options that exist, whether it be Binance or Bitfinex or who cares what, any of the other 10 or 20?
They don't. I mean, trading fees is one, like you mentioned. Another is the way they handle deposits as far as staking or interest on stablecoin and stuff like that, which is, from a trader's perspective, I'm glad we're starting to see that like competition in that respect. But let's be real here. We need like 95% less exchanges than we have anyway. So to see Polo get cripseed, it's like, you know, that's fine with me. Just for them to just disappear.
Well, it's not, I mean, I think if anything, it'll probably, they'll increase their volume for a bit. If for nothing else, for the rest of the year, they're saying they're reducing fees to zero. So they won't make any money during that, but they're, that'll probably bring a little bit of volume by reducing their fees to nothing. And then they say starting on November 1st, which is less than two weeks from now, U.S. customers can't execute trades. And then by December 15th, U.S. customers have to be gone. So it's a quick and hard goodbye to the U.S. But
Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Turn the lights off when you leave.
Yeah. Either way, it's I mean, it's another place where so much of the 2016, 2017 altcoin run, whatever, happened on Polo, and like its death has been so extreme. And there you go. RIP Polo.
Well, I'm complaining about the UI, but anybody who trades there with decent enough size probably doesn't even use the UI. So it's more than that. You know, the books were thin. It goes on and on and on. Like, it's just there were issues there that weren't as severe at other exchanges like Binance or Bitfinex even.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, there you go. More exchange news, but Circle took a big L on that one. No doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, honestly, I wouldn't say it's bullish or bearish. It's just like, it's a long time coming. The walls are closing in on the US people anyway. So not surprised in the least.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, places that are doing things for U.S. customers. You've linked the story. The one you linked is on the Financial Times, but it's been kind of in and out of the news with Fidelity rolling out a custody business for crypto. Do you know what's going on there? What's new versus what's, you know, the same old stuff Fidelity getting into crypto?
I don't really know like why they decided now to talk about this. Maybe it's because Bakkt is in the news. But like, there was a story in March or May of this year that was like Fidelity to roll out trading in a few weeks. I don't know if they ever did. I didn't really look into it further, but I don't know.
Yeah,
like I don't. Whatever. Know cool. You know, Bitcoin. The more options for institutional people, the better. So that's fine with me.
Yeah, there was also some shade thrown by someone at Fidelity. Was it in this story where they were like, people still don't know what Coinbase is, and you know, some other stuff like that? And I find that interesting. I actually feel like probably anyone under like 40 probably does know what Coinbase is. Like, they probably treat Coinbase and crypto as like synonymous terms, in fact. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if that's true, it's older investors, which of course that's a gigantic percentage of money, but it's probably older investors that are like, I can't go sign up to something called Coinbase or, you know, whatever else.
I feel like it's even more extreme. I feel like there are more people who don't realize you can take money off of Coinbase than realize that they can take money off Coinbase, you know.
Yeah, you just plop it on there and then you leave it on Coinbase forever.
Yeah.
It would probably disturb us if we learned the actual percentage of coins that just went there and stayed there.
It's high. I'm sure of it. Extremely high.
But nevertheless, I don't think that's bad for crypto. If Fidelity is Fidelity and all the others, we talked about this in the last couple shows, you know, bringing on more features for people to have access, at least to Bitcoin. What's been interesting is like this is a, you know, a contrast between the Polo story and this one. It's like there's more and more support for Bitcoin and probably Ethereum eventually, and less support for Americans that want to get into anything else. That's kind of the slow work of stuff the SEC's put out, you know, the friction that they've put out there for projects and for exchanges.
It's rolling out of unregulated and rolling into regulated stuff. Even Binance just today, was it, said that they have a FDIC insurance on USD deposits.
Really?
Which seems pretty big
FDIC
deal.
Equivalent, but not actual. That's what most of the, like, that's what Coinbase and Gemini have, I believe. It's like upwards. It's the same thing as FDIC. It's, I think, $250,000 worth of protection or something. But I don't think it's actual FDIC insurance, like equivalent style. But yeah, the type of thing that you look for in a US based.
Yeah, it says, delighted to announce. Of course.
So delighted.
USD deposits are eligible for FDIC insurance coverage, held in pooled accounts, blah, blah, blah. Provides access to pass through FDIC insurance coverage up to the depositor coverage limit, currently $250,000. Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, I mean, that's better than nothing, right? That's bullish. Come on.
BNB is like, or I'm sorry, Binance is like this two-faced machine of like all the things they do in the unregulated waters and the things they try to present to the U.S. Because on the BNB side, which is their unregulated waters, they had another burn, which is a core part of the token metrics for BNB. Is there anything significant about this burn? The only thing I saw was that I guess the last three burns ended in 888, which is like some lucky Chinese thing, which I find entertaining.
I mean, a lot of people are looking. So this is a general overarching theme right now in crypto, is volumes down across the board. Binance, Bitfinex backed, BitMEX, it's even down a little bit. So with the size of their burn, the size of the BNB burn, which they do every quarter, doesn't exactly match the volumes that they've had. I don't think we know if it includes futures volume or not in that calculation.
So the burn itself is supposed to be representative of
profits. It's supposed to be a percentage of profits for the quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they're burning more to insinuate greater profits than if it actually existed.
I mean, I'm not going to speculate what they're doing, but but it doesn't match what they've said and what is calculated. Like there's some hidden calculation there that doesn't make sense, basically. And even the Bitfinex and Leo stuff, it's like, how are they ever going to pay that off? And not in a million years are they going to pay off that Leo stuff. So with the current volume, again, back to current volume. So
they need a new run.
Backed, we talked about this last week, but it's not like backed volume picked up at all lately. But I wouldn't expect it to if everything else is sort of doing a bunch of nothing, you know?
Right. Well, BNB is up about 27% relative to Bitcoin, off its lows, but it's still down pretty well from its highs. Yeah, it's not doing too bad. I guess it's just not responding as bearishly as Bitcoin itself has. But there's a little bit of a volume uptick in BNB. All that seems pretty natural heading into a burn for the people that actively trade that token. I didn't see any other big Binance news. They're still listing tokens, like I said. It's starting to get to the point where if the liquidity is good on Binance US, it may be kind of your best bet relative to Coinbase or Bittrex type places to get access to alts for Americans. If that's your thing, the liquidity on most, like down the line, especially like outside the top four or five coins, is pretty bad on Coinbase. So if Binance US is able to get the same type of liquidity they get for their international stuff, it might be a decent place to trade for Americans. Maybe they can make a push in that realm and figure out a way to be, you know, dominant even in the US, which would surprise me. That's kind of against what my initial ideas were. I felt like they'd have more pushback, but maybe they're just operating, saying they're doing everything they want to do, and they're not really engaging as much with regulators as they say they are. I don't know. What do you think? Anything?
I mean, if they just copy Coinbase with cheaper fees, yeah, that's winning, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's got to be a threat for Coinbase.
Yeah.
So the drop in Bitcoin, some people, well, really one person from Forex Live randomly attached the justification for the drop to a bust of a website that was a some kind of child porn website. Like 300 people got arrested, and apparently this website took Bitcoin, and the chain analysis organization worked with investigators, I guess, to do chain analysis in order to track down, find out who those people were and arrest them. All of that is actually good, in my opinion. This Forex Live person attached it to the reason why Bitcoin dumped, because it was not as privacy-centric as people thought, which I think is just a load of crap, but yeah, that story's there. Did you read that article?
So not only Forex Live, but Joe Weisenthal of Bloomberg. God bless him.
Oh, yeah, that guy. He's just been going at it with the crypto community the past couple of days. I think he's enjoying it.
He seems to believe that the people who use crypto to use crypto don't know that it's pseudonymous, not anonymous. And his argument is that because it's not anonymous, it's useless. So any of us who have been here for any amount of time know that it's not anonymous and know that that's an issue. Especially being an immutable public ledger, the issue part being, you know, you can go back and say, you know, for as long as 10 years back and say you made this transaction if you de-anonymize yourself, demask yourself.
Right. So if your wallet is ever known to be attached to you, then you can follow those coins forever, basically, unless they're like really thoroughly mixed. But that's what these chain analysis type of organizations do. They even go into that, right, and try to identify and do forensics on where the coins actually went, even when people take efforts to blend it all together.
Yeah, so for me, both of his arguments are just beyond silly. because people know better. And
yeah,
and what it comes down to for that dark or that child porn thing, I think, was the somebody had reused an address or something. Like, it might have been like that simple. That's all it took, was to for the chain analysis people to track them down. And if criminals want to use Bitcoin, that's fine with me, because it's easier to find them. So
yeah,
what are you gonna, like, cash is much harder to track than Bitcoin is. So from a law enforcement perspective, I would encourage the use of crypto, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've actually met someone that is an investigator at a government organization, and they were asking me about crypto because they knew I was interested in it, and they were interested in it themselves, but they were said the same thing from a investigative perspective. They're like, yeah, if somebody uses Bitcoin, that's great for us. Like, no big deal. Because it is more trackable than cash by far.
Right.
So, yeah, that's that. I don't think it was the reason for the dump at all. You know, but that's what at least someone attached onto. And I think Bloomberg and maybe some others picked up on that. Your buddy Joe. And then, okay, so our next story is about the G7. They called Bitcoin trash. That's all I know. What's the report on this, Josh? You got to tell.
Yeah, I mean, unsurprisingly, they basically said Bitcoin's bad. It's too volatile. It hasn't established metrics for store value, qualities, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
So what's this G7? Group.
I forget, it's BIS is the thing, but I forget what that stands for. Because I'm bad at acronyms. Bank for International Settlements. Yeah, that's what it is. So of course they're going to be, I mean, they're central bankers. Of course they're going to not like crypto. They're not going to like Libra. They're not going to like anything that isn't their own stuff. They're just COIA, you know.
Yeah.
So these are surprising.
Yeah. And the G7, it's the, it's seven countries, central bank staffers, basically probably have some board at a conference, and that's where they came out with this report. But it's it's France, the US, Japan, Canada, Italy, Germany, and the UK. And
they do like stable coins, though.
Yeah, that's, I was about to say, they have a stable coins take. It's the volatility they're against, it seems.
Yeah, they have a stable coin fetish, because they realize that I think they realize that they can do that themselves and make a digital world currency, for whatever, digital global reserve currency.
Yeah, it kind of seems like everybody's positioning themselves to come in and, you know, put their final attempt at the blockchain, not Bitcoin argument, hit up the ecosystem with their digital cash arguments, and, you know, do away with Bitcoin style, you know, independent currencies.
I mean, what if each country had their own, like, or each G7 country had their own digital currency, and then the G7 digital currency would be a basket of those digital currencies?
The new DXY.
Or whatever. I don't know. I just think that would be insane, but they could do it. They could definitely do it.
I mean, what's to stop them? I don't think it's that insane. I think digital versions of cash are on the way, because then you get the same benefits, like we just talked about, that, you know, those investigators like with Bitcoin, that you can track them, do all that stuff. The anonymity of cash is a problem for an investigator, for people that want to know what's up, you know, the surveillance economy. You're
right. And that's why we're seeing cash get banned in most countries these days.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be pseudonymous. It would be always attached to your identity for your addresses.
Right, you'd be KYC'd on every single transaction, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, why wouldn't they want that? Of course they do.
I mean, yeah, that's perfectly feasible. I think we as a people living in the society need to push back against that sort of thing, you know,
and to express why privacy is important. I mean,
right? Why, like, using cash doesn't make you a criminal. Like, why using crypto doesn't make you a criminal. That sort of thing.
Yeah. And those types of conversations, it's really hard to educate people about them. Most people don't care about their privacy until they realize how problematic it is not to have it. So, yeah, they're tough. But that's what it is. So I want to dig into price in a bit, because there's some fun price conversations that we can have. Before we do, I want to dig into my Lightning story. Messing around with the Lightning Network. Have you ever messed around with the Lightning Network, Josh?
Yeah, so in the last phone I had a custodial wallet. Blue Wallet, is it called? Did you try Blue Wallet?
That's one of the ones I've been interfacing with, yeah.
And, you know, silly me, being an expert crypto guy, didn't back up the wallet, and I lost the phone, got destroyed, however you want to put it. It's unable to turn on, bricked. So the funds on that wallet are probably gone.
So you lost 100 BTC there, huh?
Yeah, can I claim that on my taxes?
Yeah.
So yeah, I've used Lightning, it is difficult to understand, even from a crypto native, like hobbyist perspective. It's difficult to understand. Like, you can't just move coins directly. You have to transfer them in a very specific way. But once they're on, like once they're on the highway, once they're on the Lightning highway, you can do whatever you want. Once they're on the Bitcoin on-chain highway, you can do whatever you want.
Yes. But Lightning to Lightning. There are some tricks. So I would like to shout out, and he agreed to come on the show. So now I'm just pressuring him by saying it before. But Matt O'Dell, who does the, I call it whatever, the Freak Show, what's their podcast called? But everybody should know Matt O'Dell. He's a Bitcoiner, nice guy, and he answered some of my questions. Nevertheless, when I first had these struggles, like he was part of the threads where I was trying to work out some of the issues that I've had. But yes, I've also used Blue Wallet. I didn't really do anything with Lightning until the Tippin thing came out, like Tippin.me, mm-hmm. which is also a custodial solution. But I just wanted to check it out because Jack Dorsey was funding it and it went viral on Twitter and everybody was playing with it, setting up their usernames. I had installed Zap before, so I opened that back up too. So I was doing this interchange and I was using Blue Wallet. I was using Zap, which is Jack Mahler's thing, and other people. It's open source project, desktop app, mobile app, non-custodial. Tippin and Blue are custodial. And then the one that I finally was able to do what I wanted with is called Breeze, which is Breez. And it's, you have to use like test flight on iOS cause it's still in beta. So it's not like in the app store or anything yet. That was the one where I was actually able to do what I want. So I learned a lot because, I realized how important when you hear the Lightning network in any other payment solution, like your network is really not a big part of it. But in this case, like you have to like build your liquidity in these non-custodial solutions. Mm-hmm. Because what I wanted to do is I had some stuff on the Blue Wallet. Not much, a couple $100 or whatever that I wanted to move on chain because I was trying to pay someone on chain, like $100, like nothing, no big deal, but they wanted it on chain. Now I understand why. And so I was determined. I was like, all right, I'm going to play with Lightning and figure out how to get this back on chain and over to them. And I just learned all this stuff, like to be able to receive Satoshis on the Lightning network, you have to have these channels open and have people promise liquidity. So like, it's a lot of complicated subjects that come up and stuff that I really want to dig in with an expert. But I just was kind of amazed at the challenges that I experienced with that. Have you dug into any of the non-custodial solutions yet?
I mean, so I think I misspoke. I said Blue Wall is custodial. Isn't it non-custodial?
Right? No, it's custodial.
Okay. So, well, anyway, So I've looked into that. It's definitely not anything like normal people are going to be doing ever. And the other thing that you didn't mention was like the invoice thing, like the backwards. I don't know how to even talk describe it, but like.
Yeah, it's like a request money. It's like every time you ask for money, you set an invoice for a specific amount.
Right. You can't just send, to my knowledge, anyway.
No, you can. You can just send with if you know their Lightning address. What's funky though is unless you have a centralized service that's kind of providing the liquidity for your wallet, then if you have this non-custodial situation like with Zap, then you have to go open a channel to somebody and hope that they'll like reciprocate so that you can receive funds. So the ability to say take money is dependent on the network that you've built and the capacity that mini network has. And so like you have to link together all these networks and you slowly build up this liquidity pool of, bitcoins that are locked into the Lightning network and allow you to send and receive Satoshis. And that's why it becomes problematic. And then there's the issue of taking it off of the Lightning network. So taking it from the Lightning network back to the main chain is actually really difficult because you have to have that capability and do it basically through like a swap. So it's kind of like an atomic swap. And there are limited services that do that. And your wallet has to be able to do that in kind of the appropriate way. And it's just this UI thing. That's where Breeze came in handy for me. So I was actually finally able to do it with Breeze because when I wanted to do it with the Blue Wallet, the way that it links you to like withdraw your funds takes you to one of these other services like Zigzag, I think is that one. But there's like 10 of them, And I would go to each one and it would either be down or it would be in beta and unable to use, or it would be shut off to Americans. And I was like, how do I get this crap back onto the main chain? And people were saying like, well, just close the channel. But I didn't have it on a Lightning wallet that had open channels. So like you have to get the channel open. So that, again, that's why Breeze was cool, because when you set up Breeze, it automatically creates a channel between you and Breeze maintains the liquidity pool so that you instantly have send and receive capability. So they kind of handle some of those UX issues for you, which is nice, because it's a freaking pain in the butt. Like, I was just amazed, because it was like, I look at a guide and it's like, oh, if you want liquidity to be able to receive Satoshis, just wait a few weeks and people will eventually connect to you on the Lightning Network. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Is that really what we're saying here that we're supposed to do? Anyway.
Yeah, that's not ideal. It's definitely not a solution that I see being rolled out widely that people are going to like latch on to. It's definitely something in the background that is valuable, you know, like the liquid sidechain, a similar thing. You know, it's difficult to set up, but when you have the stuff set up, it's
great. I've never set that up either.
No, no, I haven't either, but I'm just saying, like, that's an example of something that's not going to be like consumer facing, I don't think, ever. You know, it's great that we can use the Lightning Network and mess around with it, but it's just too complicated right now.
Yeah. I also want to give a shout out. And unfortunately, this is another, I just was realizing like how, I wouldn't call it beta. I would say like this stuff is really alpha level. Like some of it works. You get warnings all across the board. Not very many things are live. The ones that are live don't have a great user experience. So I think the urgency to create good user experiences should be really high. However, so there's this company called, I think it's Async, like A-C-I-N-Q. And just today, they announced their second wallet. They have another one called Eclair, but this wallet, it solves some of the stuff that I was just talking about, like that kind of instant problem that you have with receive capability. So you set up a Lightning wallet, you want to accept Satoshis, like one of the primary things, you send or you receive sats, right? Well, you can't receive sats unless you do X. Also, you have to fund these with regular Bitcoin. So you end up doing two or three transactions before you can do anything. Anyway, so they solved a lot of that in their onboarding too, where they help you have immediate liquidity to receive sats. And just generally, it seems like they've fixed several things that I experienced when I was trying to wrangle this. Like, you don't have to do the channel management, and you know, the onboarding is a little simpler and all that. So, and it's still non-custodial. Which is, you know, just like everything else, like you'd rather keep your coin, you know, your Bitcoins on a Trezor, or, you know, have your own private keys, or the Bitcoin's not yours. That same argument exists. How do you do that with a good user experience?
Yeah, it's tough. Even Lightning has their own app, but I haven't really interacted with it much. Have you? Did you try that one?
I never even found a download unless it was through GitHub. My decision for myself was I'm not even going to try anything if I have to like run the software myself, rather than like installing a prepackaged desktop or mobile app.
Gotcha.
Because I think whatever they had, it was like you got to run some stuff in the command line and all that. And to be honest, I just don't want to do that.
and like you said, like the only reason I had it was because of Tippin, but also I was at some Bitcoin meetup and I paid for the bill and everybody paid me back and with Lightning payments, with like Venmo style stuff.
Yeah. And so then you say, okay, well, when do I settle this? Like, and how? And that was the part that I got stuck on, because on the custodial solution, you have to run a swap through that thing. That thing was broken. Literally, it's like, it was just like, it's down. You know, I'm like, okay, well, now how? And that's when I ran into problems. However, if you're just going Lightning to Lightning constantly, it's no big deal. It's when you want to get back on chain, like settle it from Lightning back on chain, that I ran into trouble. It was an eye-opening experience for me though, because the UX, I can tell people are working on it. I don't want to like belittle the effort, but scaling Bitcoin, like the Lightning Network is pretty much the only real direction that's going. You know, it's not like, is there a plan B? You know, people say plan B is Bitcoin, but like, what's the plan B for scalability?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff in the works. Taproot, Graftroot, Schnorr. There's a bunch of stuff. I don't think it's like soonish stuff, but
yeah, but and also like, not at, like big layer two stuff, right?
But look at fees right now. Like, fees are arguably too low. You know,
people, oh yeah, they were super low. if I would have had to do all this on like back in 2017 when Roger Ver was spamming the network, it would have been awful because the fees would have been more than I would have actually trying to send.
And people are still like hypothesizing, you know, what fees will need to be to support security on the network and all this stuff. So there's going to be a happy medium. Like, yeah, I want fees to be zero, but I also want the network to be secure. So scalability, while important in the far term, in the near term, like there's no pressure for it. You know, there was pressure for SegWit because of fees. Right now, like there's no real pressure for scalability because everything's cheap. Right.
Yeah, I was able to send like $7 on the main chain and get one confirmation and pay, I don't know, a few cents for doing so. It wasn't a big deal. There was a time where you had to pay an $80 fee to move Bitcoin, you know, so that would have been a lot more difficult. I'm honestly glad the fees are that cheap, but I agree with you. It does put less pressure on layer two solutions. But in the long term, if Bitcoin is going to be used for transacting, then these layer two solutions have to exist and they have to be really good. Right now, I would say they show promise, but they're really technical. Like even the verbiage inside the apps, even the apps that have a better like user interface, the verbiage is still complicated. Understanding what the heck you're doing. It's not Venmo-ish yet. And I know people probably hate that comparison, but you know what? Venmo's what I can use day in, day out.
Yeah, that's why I said Venmo. Like, you know, someone Venmoed me something on Lightning, basically.
So you got paid back for your dinner and then never got the sats off, huh?
Yeah, I still have the phone. So we'll see if it's ever recoverable. Well, if anybody can help me out, let me know.
But you got to be able to get the phone turned on so that you can get a backup of the wallet itself.
Yeah, I don't know if you can access like the memory or whatever outside of the phone. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's the I guess one version of, or a version of my Lightning struggles, but at the end of the day, so I was finally able to use Breeze. So this whole liquidity thing too, like you can kind of be a leech on the liquidity, I guess. So they give you like X, like a limit for how much you can receive or send, like take advantage of the network without contributing to it. Either way, you can move up to 1 million sats at a time. So I did like, it took me, I probably did 10 transactions just to send someone $100. So it was a lot of moving and grooving. It probably could have been taken down to like 4 if it was just using if I said, okay, I'm using Breeze and that's all I need, then I would have just like sent the Satoshis to Breeze from Lightning because I was already on Lightning through like Tippin and Blue Wallet, but I needed to get them to the main chain. It probably would have only taken 4 because just 2 rounds of doing the 1 million Satoshis.
Yeah, it's definitely not seamless. That's for sure.
Definitely not. It was a struggle, but a learning experience and a good one. That's how all good things start.
But it was cool. It's zero. It's basically zero confirmations. I mean, it's called Lightning because it's instant. So
yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Like, you look from one to the other and it's there.
Yeah, not to like, it sounds like we're crapping all over Lightning, but no, that part of Lightning is great. That part of Lightning is amazing. Like it's literally zero fee, currently zero fee anyway, and it's instant. So that's great. But
yeah,
getting it off of Lightning is the biggest issue, and understanding that you need to like go in and out of the chains is a bit of a pain for sure.
Yeah, I definitely think there's some work that can be done there. Like get some good designers on these Bitcoin driven companies that are very tech centric right now, and I think there could be some real promise. I know people are working on that. That company I mentioned, for instance, I like looked them up, and the only news on their blog prior to a couple of wallet releases was raising like, you know, $10 million or whatever. So they're getting the funding to build out these applications, and I do think they'll probably be prolific, especially as you know, actual Bitcoin usage gains popularity. So it's promising, and at the same time, I was highly disturbed, not just by the user experience, but like the documentation kind of across the board for how to do stuff in Lightning is horrific. So learning resources, I think, can also be something that's beneficial.
Whether you're an enterprise fund manager or a retail trader, buying and selling cryptocurrencies successfully requires price discovery you can rely on. Brave New Coin's liquid indices provide trusted US dollar prices for Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Ripple. Featuring end-of-day or intraday outputs, you can count on the BLX, ELX, and XRPLX for accurate US dollar pricing for smart contract oracles, settlement price discovery, net asset valuation, and performance analysis. Visit BraveNewCoin.com to find out more.
Well, if you want another interesting experience, try to spin up a Lightning node.
Yeah.
Because I tried
you bought
that.
The Casa HODL one.
No, I have a different one, but I tried to add a Lightning node to my Bitcoin node, and I couldn't figure it out, and neither could someone who was helping me. So
nice.
But that was just that specific node. I'm sure it's easier with just like a Raspberry Pi or whatever. Anyway,
yeah, I don't know. Even with the user interface, like the one, the Zap one that Jack Mahler's and them do, like mm-hmm. I opened it up and it's a node, and you know, I was like, opened a couple channels, didn't really know what I was doing, and then eventually it's like kind of the same time frame as it takes to get a confirmation. It was like, your channel is open. It's like, now you can send 40,000 satoshis and you can receive 0 satoshis. So I was like, well, why? And that's how I started learning about the liquidity stuff. So you have to have somebody committing back to you. So it's like you have to create this tunnel between two nodes and then keep it open and keep it funded. And like all that gets, it's just complicated, man. It's just complicated.
Yeah. I envision a day when you'll be able to send from your hardware wallet just seamlessly back and forth. That's my future.
Yeah, that's ideal to me. Like you have a mobile wallet, a hardware wallet, like on your desktop, and both of them have Bitcoin and Lightning built in, and you're just kind of like you would move from your debit account to your savings account.
Right, exactly.
Interbank. Exactly. You should be able to do kind of the same thing so that you're only revealing your, you know, your savings or, you know, your actual Bitcoin, whatever, on that layer one. It's kind of off in its own place, and all your layer two stuff, whatever, you know, you got all the lightning bits there. All right. Well, let's leave that there and talk a little bit about price, Bitcoin altcoins, anything else you want to discuss. But let's start with Bitcoin, which, you know, it went up and tested pretty perfectly and got a daily fake out on that 200-day moving average that we talked about before that I'd been watching really closely. It was quite brutal. I took a spanking there. I was actually looking for a pop above and got stopped out on my trade. And I think 81.50 was when I finally gave up. So that sucked. But at least it was there because we went down to 7,800 is the low so far. We're at the bottom of this range that we've been flagging in. This is, to me, it's just real nasty looking. Looks like we're just flagging on the lows. And looks like we're ready for continuation if Angelo is to be proven correct. What are your thoughts on price, Josh?
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't look great. Being denied at the 200 or paused at the 200 is fine, but being denied so violently is definitely, I think, telling of the market sentiment as a whole. Like, people couldn't wait to sell the 200. They were so excited when it popped up, you know?
Yeah, so October 11th, the daily, there was a pinned daily right between the 20, I'm on the SMA, not the EMA. The 20 and the 200 crossed on October 9th. It was like pinned right between the 20 and the 200, like tapped both sides. The next day, it opened at 85, 82 ish, went up above the 200 to 88.24 and got fiercely sold and closed that daily around 8,200. So it got sold off over $600 from the high. And that's a pretty clean rejection. It was pretty ugly. Since then, we're just doing a bunch of nothing except going down.
The only two bullish things I see are the TKC clamp on the daily for the cloud, and there's a 4-hour bull div that's confirmed now. Everything else I'm seeing just doesn't look good. You know, we're flirting with this yearly pivot and continually like going below it, just seeing like if there's any liquidity, even in the bottomless range. Like, we pulled up a little bit now, 79.58 here. But we're getting a death cross on the daily in a couple days, if not today. Daily B bands are expanding to the downside. The VPVR node at, what is that, 78?
Yeah, we're grinding into that, the thick part.
We're either like just below it or at it at this point. So like, it's make it or break it right here. We've got
Let's explain some of these. You talked about the C clamp. You talked about the death cross, VRPR, node or VPVR node. All right. First, the C-clamp, that's a mean reversion thing. So the cloud, if the daily double cloud is bearish, and the C-clamp means the Keesian's still up high. So we're a long way from it. It's at 93.28 right now. Price is at 79.50. So there's a big C-shaped kind of thing between the Tinkin and the Keesian, and the price is up there on the Tinkin. So there's a potential, if mean reversion happens, 9,300 would be our target. That's that one. When you talk about the Death Cross, are you talking about the 50 and 200 EMAs?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have the MAs already crossed?
Well, the 20 and the 200 did. The 50 and 200 surely have not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So the EMAs are fast moving averages, exponential moving averages. They weight candles heavier that are more recent. Therefore, it moves a little different than SMAs. Josh and I have talked about that on the show some. But yeah, you got a death cross there, which is typically defined between the 50-day and the 200-day. The 50 SMA and 200 SMA, they are still about, if I'm looking at the right ones here, maybe like $500, $600 apart. So they haven't quite gotten there yet, but they're duck bill shaped. they're narrowing. And then what was the other one you said? Oh, the VPVR. So this is the volume profile where it shoots out horizontally from the chart. So it's telling you there was volume at this price before, and now you're kind of retesting that same volume area. So what's creating this one is back May until we broke out mid-June, there was consolidation in the 7Ks, like after we busted through 6K, before we went and hyped hard up into the 13K range. So that's where, if you look on it and you have that volume profile, we're chewing down into that, which, yeah, like you say, it kind of means we either got to respond off of it. Like, there's obviously volume interest. We're just establishing more volume interest now. And if we fall through it, then we go down to the next level, kind of the next gap in that volume profile, and find where's the interest there. And the big point of interest long term is back on the 6,400 price zone where we spent all of 2018. So that's kind of the gap from, what, 7,900 to 6,400. Is that your idea for where we can go if we move down again?
Yeah, if you look at the multi-year pitchfork, which I know you love.
I love it.
So if you look at all of Q1, not all of Q1, most of Q1 from like January to April. Yeah, so Q1. It held in this diagonal zone for that entire period. So that tells me that the potential for bottoming here is between 62 and 69. Because that's the zone projected up to today, basically.
Yeah. So a couple of things that I've noticed, because I want to provide another side of this. It looks, the price action looks bad. I think that's pretty well determined. Even if you look at some of the trend following stuff, like the moving averages, the cloud, they look pretty bearish too. The weekly cloud, by the way, was a nice weekly Keesian rejection.
At 85, yeah.
Yeah. So couple of things that don't look as bad. One that I really have noticed is the regular volume profile. So like the actual declining volume. We really didn't get breakout level volume a few weeks ago when we broke down from 10K. It was like we got a little spike in volume, but then we just continued the profile that we had been making before. So volumes are still way down after that. And to me, that indicates maybe there's a little less selling pressure overall than we anticipated there would be after such a break. Maybe we'll get it in a bigger scope if we break down from this like flag now that we've been in for a couple of weeks. Maybe that volume will truly spike, but it wasn't a big spike in my mind, which I found interesting. Maybe there's exhausted selling on that metric. Do you think there's anything to that?
I mean, I'm just checking this on the 12-hour. So the 12-hour Bitstamp chart, it was the highest volume since February 2018.
Yeah, but it was but basically after one candle or two candles, it was back to normal. Like if you just ignore those, then it just continues down from where it was before. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like volume came right back down. We're back in a range again.
Yeah, it wasn't like establishing a new pattern. It was like
right.
It was just saying, oh, back to just where I was just the other day and below that. So to me, I don't know. It's not convincing from a volume standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, sure. But everything else is like, there's no way this is a buy right now. There just is no way.
Yeah, no, I agree. The only other argument I would make, and this goes back to are we in a bull market or a bear market, would be that On the weekly sense, we're technically still in a bull market in my mind, based on the 200-week moving average. However, the distance between where we are right now and where we would be in a full bear market on that moving average is a huge drop. So there's plenty of room down, I guess. Couple of interesting points on the weekly chart while I'm on it. Looking at BLX, by the way, it's Brave New Coin's liquid index that shows the full history of Bitcoin. The 50-week moving average is at 6,800. That high volume node, 6,400. And gonna throw this one out there. The bottom of the cloud is right around 6K. I've said this since before, around when we broke down from 9,800 to 10K. In my mind, if we get below 7K, I have to be a buyer. Like, I have to find a way to buy anything and everything below 7K, no matter how low we go, unless we lose maybe like 5,700. And even then, I'd probably just start hitting accumulation mode. Like, just give me a monthly buy, you know, because I just feel like Bitcoin's cheap. Anything under 7K, super cheap. So we're closer to my buy zone than my sell zone, that's for sure.
That I would agree with. Yeah.
That said, it looks like we want another leg down, huh?
It's just painful to have like a 100-day consolidation range drop down immediately into another 3-week-plus consolidation range.
Yeah, it makes it hard to trade.
Yeah. If you're trading this range, you're longing the bottom and shorting the top or whatever. But like on a macro level, it just doesn't give me any bullish confidence, that's for sure.
Yeah. If we fall down another level, I personally think we probably have some stopping zones like in the lower half of the 7Ks. I don't think we go straight to 6K or whatever. I think we could hit 72 to 7,400, find some interest there, grind down again. That would probably be a lower consolidation time. But yeah. Angelo says 6K. Yeah, he got a lot of attention. He gets a lot of attention every time he tweets. Do you think there was something to it?
I don't understand why. Maybe I just don't remember him well enough or care, but
I think kind of at the top he was on the BitMEX leaderboard for like notional Bitcoin winnings, so everybody knew he was very, very wealthy and had done really well on BitMEX. So and also like he went silent basically throughout the end of the bull market. Which also it just adds extra mystique or whatever. So now every time he tweets, like some people swear he moved the market one time that he tweeted about how he expected longs to wash out below 8K or something. And now he wants 6K, of course. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, good for him and his cult of personality.
Yeah. Good job, Angelo. Hope you're doing well, buddy.
ETH also doesn't look great. I mean, I don't know. Like, but here's the difficult thing. Like BTC looks like it's going to roll over.
Yeah.
USD pairs don't look amazing except for Ripple and Stellar. And to like think that if BTC rolls over, all these BTC pairs are going to do really well. I just don't see it, even though the BTC pairs look way better than the USD pairs. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, some of the Bitcoin pairs look really good to me.
Like ETH BTC looks ready for a 15% up move any day now. But
ETH BTC is also, I would say, on the precipice. Like it's a great trade area because you have a clear stop and a clear upside.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and it's been grinding that. It's like a ascending triangle almost, but just been grinding that 0222 zone for like 2 weeks now.
It has touched the Bollinger Band midline, which is the 20-day SMA, several times and has held it. And it's also basically holding the Tinkin if you're looking at the cloud. Now, if it breaks down from that consolidation it's been in, the cloud says it's got to go down to like 0.0197 or so, which is a pretty hefty little drop there. But to the upside, you're looking at 0.025 or so if it breaks up. So I like BTC from a tradable range perspective.
I feel like everybody's waiting for something, even in Legacy. Like we're waiting to hear about, is it October 30th, the next Fed meeting? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they're people are able to talk today and then they get muted for a couple of weeks, I think, until they make bigger statements or whatever.
So we're waiting on that. We're waiting on SPX new highs or not. We're waiting on Trump impeachment stuff. We're waiting on halvening. We're waiting on ETH hard fork. We're waiting on CME rollover in on the 25th. All this stuff is sort of like coming to a boiling point towards the end of the year.
Well, you want to know a coin that it has not been waiting and it's full bull on the USD and the BTC pairs?
Let's say ZRX.
It is ZRX indeed. So, and I'm still not in.
No, I didn't touch it.
Man, I was looking at it and I just I was like, I want to get into this if it comes and retests the 200-day moving average on the BTC pair. So I was watching it before it broke above. I didn't get in it before it broke above. It was a cloud breakout and a 200-day breakout kind of at the same time, around 3,500 sats. And
it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and I had said, I was like, this is money spot. Like, if it gets in there, like, you want to buy this on that on the retest. That Bitcoin dump took it all the way back down to that, and it wicked so hard, you would have made over 10% intraday buying that dip, but I was not in a place to be able to put that order in. But I was very sad about it because I was watching it, did exactly what I wanted, and now it's just consolidating again. Just below 4K sats, looks good, looks ready to go another leg, and I'm not in. And I'm like, why am I not in? I don't know. I don't even know why I'm not in. On the USD pair, it's back up into resistance between kind of 30, 35 cents. It's gotten maybe to 38 cents a few times. If it gets above that, then it's from a Coinbase chart perspective, off to the races, like 60, 70 cents. So yeah, it still looks really good. One of the best looking altcoin charts that I see personally.
It's moved 32% since the 200 moving average.
Yeah.
EMA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that should have been on my radar, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Shame on us, right?
Yeah, seriously. We even talked about it like past couple shows. We talked about it.
Hey, if someone got in because we talked about it, then we want to hear from you because I need to celebrate someone's victory on that.
I'm so fixated on this Bitcoin range and ETH. I just didn't even think about anything else, honestly. I did look at another one of your favorites, Tezos, yesterday.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I was thinking about how everyone was giving me so much flack for saying that being added to Coinbase was bearish. And the chart speaks for itself, but it's been straight down since the Coinbase listing.
Other than like the first couple of days, which I was fortunate to have a couple of good trades in those early days of Tezos on Coinbase. Right now, the Tezos USD chart looks worse than most alts. The BTC chart is hanging on by a thread, but it's kind of at a important point here, around 11K Satoshis. It's got a lot of upside up to 13-14, a lot of downside if it breaks down from that. I did get into a new position. I didn't get into ZRX. I got in another one. Looking for them value plays, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
you said it looks like every alt. I think it looks a little better, but it did have a deep retrace, and there's a couple of reasons why to not be interested in this with me. But I got into Loom, which is I interviewed Coin Artist about the gaming platform that she's building with Neon District, and they're actually building this on Loom, and that's kind of how I was looking into this. I like the fact that it's pretty liquid, but pretty low mid cap. It's around 20, 25 million. And it pumped really hard and then retraced most of that, but didn't make new lows. So I kind of got in around that. It's a little bit of a preemptive strike though, because the things that I normally would like to look at, like where has it made has it gotten inside the cloud? If it's been in a bearish trend, like to make an edge to edge trade, is it above the 20-day moving average? It's neither of those things. It's just on the underside. So it's kind of a, get in before it pops type of scenario for me, which will probably result in my demise and stopping out. But nevertheless, I've given it a shot. The upside on it is tremendous, which is why I was interested, because from where it is to the 200-day moving average is more than 100% move. So just testing the 200-day again from the underside is a doubler, which I would like that a lot. So yeah, I mean, I'm testing that out.
We've talked about this before, I'm pretty sure, but like rotating in and out of stuff throughout various cycles of where things are at. So like, you know, ZRX is late. It's late, either late bear cycle or early bull cycle, but these other coins, like even Stellar BTC is like Ripple or so like Loom, if I was ordering these as far as like cycles, you know, it'd be Loom, Stellar, Ripple, ZRX, and then you'd sort of manage your assets accordingly. Maybe you're deeper into Loom versus ZRX
cycle,
at this point.
Cycle them a bit,
right? Not trading advice, but that's just something, you know, you can
they
do
that, especially these ones on Coinbase, because there's maybe like 10 altcoins that you can kind of get in and out of. And they really do cycle a bit. Like I've found before that BAT follows ZRX a bit, and it's been doing that again. It looks pretty toppy to me right now, but it doesn't look as strong as ZRX, but it did follow. It did respond nicely. And it bottomed relative to Bitcoin in the beginning of September. So, there's some serious bottomy looking stuff on some of these alts relative to the BTC pairs for sure. Even poor old XMR. We talked about how miserable it looked, I think, last episode. And of course, the last 3 days have been just like a vicious move up. But it's so far, it's nothing confirmation. It's all like bearish retest type of stuff, unfortunately.
Yeah, I saw somebody comparing, not comparing, but correlating like the darknet market stuff with the XMR pump, saying people are rotating out of BTC into XMR. And I mean, that's possible, certainly, but if you're on an exchange, you're going to be KYC'd.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, it's not like that's safe.
Yeah. You mentioned
for criminals. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
That's fine. You mentioned XRP. It looks pretty strong relative to Bitcoin. Like, I mean, it's really rounded off the bottom. It bottomed at 2,400 Satoshis and it is at 3,700 right now. So it's on the underside of the top of the bearish cloud, underside of the 200-day. It's not where I want to get into XMR, but if you had played it when it crossed like above the 20-day into the cloud, anything like that, then there was a 25%+ move, even if you just caught the middle of that. So nice move for people that were paying attention to that. I swear, every time I try to play XRP, it always fails those breakouts. And whenever I don't, it follows through and goes right on and does the thing that I was looking for. Because I'm not in on this, even though I played the last one in May and had to stop out on it. So that's a bummer. Did you play that one at all?
No, not XRP. Not this time. The alt charts, though, collectively sort of look like they're teeing up for a crazy December or January. Kind of like how it was in 2017. But again, like to see BTC where it's at, if I was more bullish on BTC, maybe it'd be different. But I don't know. Like I'm so torn between all these, the alt charts and the BTC charts. Because I really think BTC is going to, we're going to see like 665 this year even. But that doesn't mean like December can't be great.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, a lot can happen. I would also say this is not like some of this bullishness we've talked about in individual coins. It is individual coins. Like if I look at the overall Bitcoin dominance chart, which is putting whatever 2,000 coins in there. It's consolidating, but it's still in a very downward direction. Like it's the bumps are not very high. Like it looks a little bit like a falling wedge in dominance. So the moves are pretty small. It's just not as good, I guess.
Yeah, it is. If you're putting cloud on the dominance chart, it is starting to roll over into the bearish territory.
Yeah, meaning, and that's good for alts, but it's still, it's got this consolidation that looks like it could just rip the other way too and like fake that out.
Yeah, it could. Definitely. Like I understand the falling wedge argument, but until it pops up, like you just say, well, it's going to go, it's in an active edge to edge right now.
Yeah. So that would be good for altcoins on that because it's the dominance that's falling.
And the bottom of the cloud is the 200-day EMA.
It is.
So it's and, even well, more.
The bottom of the cloud and the 200-day SMA are pretty close too. The SMA puts it at 64.5. The bottom of the cloud is at 65.25.
I don't see what the driver would be. You know, we don't have ICOs anymore. We don't have
retail volume per se.
It doesn't have to be a reason, but I just like,
couldn't Bitcoin breaking down and like I think if Bitcoin's going to rampage and go to like 16K or test the highs in the next quarter or something, people are really going to avoid altcoins. But if Bitcoin falls down, like they're going to look for where can they get some alpha relative to Bitcoin or whatever, you know?
I mean, maybe, but I don't know. I just don't know. Like it's a really weird, it's really awkward time right now, I think, in the market in general.
Yeah. I think my mindset generally, though, is look for opportunities in alts, not necessarily like, we're certainly not in like the look for a 10x opportunity, but I think these 20, 30, 40% type of moves are pretty awesome if you can catch them. Keep your stops nice and tight because all it takes is one day, like, and Bitcoin can really rampage those altcoins. So if you keep the stop tight and then you buy the blood, if the broader trend is able to continue in the favor of certain altcoins, then maybe you can find an edge there. But it's not easy. It requires a lot of monitoring.
Yeah, there's a fine line between becoming patient and becoming a community member.
You know? Yeah.
So yeah, if you're looking for those value plays, you know, I agree with you. They're there. Like we clearly missed a few of them over the past couple of weeks, but I don't know. I'm too biased right now on the Bitcoin side, I think, to even want to look at an altcoin chart and think, oh, this can really move. Like the downside of being trapped in an altcoin trade when Bitcoin does even like a minus 10% day is just devastating, you know?
Yeah, because you're probably going to lose 10% on your alt plus 10% on the BTC.
Right. It's, yeah.
And all it takes is one day, one wick.
Yeah.
Your mileage may vary, you know, do your own risk analysis, et cetera, et cetera. That's our take. I want to end it on there with community member comments. Josh, what did you write this week?
Let's see. Talked about Ripple. Talked about Stellar. Just sort of why they're in the back of my mind. And I talked about Decred, or was that last week?
I think that was last week.
No, that was this week. Decred.
It was this week.
Decred, Stellar, and Ripple. The big thing with Ripple is the declining on-chain metrics are just really bad. Like, the trend is down so heavily. I don't know why price is up so high. Other than from a speculative point, it's like at a local low, so it bounced, you know, or at a strong low.
Well, Ripple's never really needed much more than speculation to make it pump.
That's true. Decred is Decred's the opposite. Like, Decred's on-chain stuff is massively up, but prices are just keep plummeting. So
yeah, and Adam Pickering from Brave New Coin did an interview with them too. That's worth checking out on that. You linked it up in your tweet, at least. I don't know if you did it in your article. I can't remember.
Yeah, everybody. I say this a lot, but once there's one good idea in crypto, everybody's got to copy that idea. So Decred, you know, it's a good idea. Decred is going for private transactions on chain.
Yeah.
So, you know,
they kind of have a novel take. They're one of the few that they're still saying like, hey, we're pretty good as a currency, and we got these things, these advantages over Bitcoin. I feel like a lot are just not even trying to go after Bitcoin as like a currency and say, hey, we're okay with Bitcoin, but we want to make improvements. We want to do this governance standpoint, privacy standpoint, et cetera. Decred still goes down that road. And I think it's really interesting because if it pays off, the benefits are gigantic. Like if you can actually be a, hey, we're a better digital currency than Bitcoin or whatever. Really interesting concept.
One thing I like that I think most Bitcoiners don't is the treasury aspect of miner rewards or whatever, the block reward. Just the fact that you're subsidizing developers to develop the chain just makes so much sense to me. It doesn't have to be massive, like in Zeke's case, but I don't know. It's a fine line, assuredly.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely interesting that they're doing that. Like, long term, who knows what's going to happen? But it's definitely interesting.
I agree. Well, everybody go check out those articles. Check out that Brave New Coin podcast with Decred. That's a good one. And then go to ledgerstatus.com for my stuff. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, rate it in iTunes. We would really love that. It's very helpful for helping people find the show. And thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. Later.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry.